Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Anchor Systems Hawaii.
Welcome to the new reality edition of Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, where we serve you the first bite of today's science, technology, and innovation. I'm Bert Lam, and today's show, we have Christina Comfort, and she is with the Water Quality Program Manager over at Wastewater Alternatives and Innovation. And she's also pursuing her PhD over at UH Manoa in the Oceanography Department. But today, we're going to be talking about a program called Seasick. And Christina, I want to welcome you to Bite Marks Cafe.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Now, Christina, you've got a lot of involvement with a variety of different organizations. I mean, getting a PhD and working for, Wastewater Alternatives. So maybe why don't we start with you sharing a little bit about what Wastewater Alternatives and Innovation does.
Yeah, so Wastewater Alternatives and Innovations, or VAI for short, we are a small nonprofit that's based locally here in Hawaii, and we work to mitigate the cesspool crisis. I think probably a lot of people have heard about cesspool pollution and how that impacts water quality around the islands. And our mission is really to protect water quality, reduce sewage pollution, and restore healthy watersheds.
And I think I've heard of VAI before, and it's been around for a little while, right? At least four or five years?
Yeah, that's about right. So it started up, I think, in late 2019. I joined the team in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And, we've been slowly building our different programs. We work definitely in the water quality sector, which is the program that I lead. And then there's also workforce development to try to get people into the wastewater management sector. And also we do a lot of work with legislation, trying to help communities and homeowners transition away from cesspools to better wastewater management, lots of outreach and education, mm-hmm. and bringing innovative technologies to the island to try to help help with those cesspool upgrades.
Now, I'm curious, what is the primary funding source for VAI? Is it state money, federal money, or philanthropic?
Right now, we have mostly a combination of philanthropic support, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. Federal support. So my program, the Water Quality Program, is primarily funded through philanthropic support and grant programs.
So in terms of water quality, maybe describe a little bit about your particular program. Is it ocean focused, or is it kind of you were talking about cesspools and how that might potentially kind of leach into the aquifer? Where do you see your sweet spot or crosshairs?
Cesspool pollution and wastewater pollution impacts the whole coastal water system, so mm-hmm. that definitely includes the aquifer in any developed urbanized area, and then it also includes streams and the coastal ocean. A lot of times we work in streams and the coastal ocean in terms of where we sample, but then we're also looking for things like submarine groundwater discharge to take a look at what's coming out from the aquifer too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then your PhD work, is it kind of related, or how does that intersect with what you do at VAI?
Definitely, it's related. Yeah, my latter chapters in my PhD are focused on some different aspects of how wastewater pollution can be detected more quickly, and also how wastewater pollution, how the fate of pollutants is impacted by things like current flow in the nearshore environment and built structures in the environment, like jetties and that kind of thing, mm-hmm. Can really affect how long pollutants stay in a certain area.
Is it pretty much focused in Hawaii and the kinds of, environments that you would encounter not only on Oahu but on the neighbor islands as well?
Yeah, so we work across the main islands, and we We are really focused on Hawaii right now. A lot of this work is also relevant to other Pacific Islands that also struggle with inadequate wastewater infrastructure. But yeah, at the moment, all our work is focused in Hawaii.
And then I would imagine that from a philanthropic standpoint, I mean, a lot of the donor money is specific to a particular, let's say, subject or area. So is that pretty much directed to research, you know, and projects in Hawaii?
Yes, yeah. All of our funds are just supporting our staff to, you know, and supporting data analysis. You know, we have to take samples and get them analyzed, and each of those samples costs some money to analyze. And yeah, you're right. A lot of the philanthropic organizations around Hawaii are focused on certain watersheds or islands and things like that. So we end up doing a lot of community-based work because of that, where we go and develop a relationship with certain communities and help them to understand their water system and what's going on with the pollution in their environment locally.
I'm kind of curious, like what communities do you find yourself focusing in on most, I guess, here on Oahu?
On Oahu, we have a few different projects that we've worked on. One that pops right to my mind is in Haula. We work with the Haula Community Association, and they have a lot of cesspools up there. So they were really concerned about, you know, where along the coastline in that watershed is there more pollution. So we tested all the different streams and coastal waters. And, you know, folks up there are also concerned about, for instance, what happened during the Kona low. Some of those cesspools are really close to the ocean and in, you know, really low elevation. And those were getting inundated with all the floodwaters and ocean water and overflowing. So that also causes a risk for public health.
You know, there's a number of areas, like you said, like in Haula as an example, but out in the Hawaii Kai area, aren't there also cesspools that are potentially like leaching into the ocean? And I recall doing, you know, some work early on with doing some water samples, you know, in that area. And it's really interesting because, you know, there's these kind of like aquifers, right? And you can actually see some of the fresh water coming up, you know, in the shoreline. And I think that's where a lot of the water quality testing is taking place. So I would imagine that just about anywhere, and you mentioned Haula, I mean, there are a multitude of areas that have that kind of aquifer that is, you know, releasing fresh water, but some of that fresh water might have stuff in it. So do you do anything in the Hawaii Kai area or even in, let's say, the Pearl City area? Because I know that also kind of leaches out into the Pearl Harbor, you know, water that's there next to Pearl City and Aiea.
Right. Yeah. So we haven't actually done any testing in the Hawaii Kai area, but I know Surf Rider Foundation does have some sites out in Kuli'o'o, maybe a couple other places along there. And they test regularly for fecal bacteria, which is a potential indicator that wastewater could be polluting that area. I know that in Waimanalo, just around the corner from Hawaii Kai, there is definitely some concerns about the cesspools there. A lot of the area around Hawaii Kai and part of Waimanalo too, but and you know, over in Pearl City, a lot of that is on sewer, but that doesn't mean that there's no pollution, right? You can also get pollution from sewer, like overflows in flooding conditions. I'm sure folks have seen over the last month, there's been lots of wastewater treatment spills because of just getting inundated with all that flood water. So there's multiple sources where sewage pollution can come from.
Well, you know, I do want to get into the program called Seasick and how that came about, because I find that kind of an interesting name given the actual work you're doing in finding about, you know, more about these sort of waterborne pathogens. But we'll hold that thought. We'll be right back after this short break to continue our conversation with Christina Comfort, who is the Water Quality Manager, Program Manager over at Wastewater Alternatives and Innovation, also called VAI. And she's the manager of this the Seasick program. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Anchor Systems Hawaii.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR 1. I'm Bert Lum, and if you're just joining us, we're talking to Christina Comfort, who is the Water Quality Manager, Program Manager over at Wastewater Alternatives and Innovation, and also manages a program called CSIC. Now, Christina, you know, when I hear the name of a program called CSIC, I'm thinking, you know, it's got to have something to do with me riding a boat and rocking back and forth and feeling not so good. And, you know, that's how I would typically get seasick. But your program really is not so much about being seasick, right? It's more about finding locations that people might have picked up something and what you call, you know, refer to as these sort of waterborne pathogens. So how do you help me understand how you matched up the idea of seasick as a name and water, you know, waterborne pathogens?
Yeah, so you're right. Seasick normally refers to getting sick on a boat, but we just kind of thought it would be catchy and funny because it's a little bit of a reverse play on words, where what we're looking for is where people are getting sick from being in contact with the sea.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
So we're basically trying to find out where, you know, people are going into the water, whether it's fishing, surfing, paddling, and getting infections afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that we want to just get a better understanding of where pollution is getting into the coastal environment and actually causing some public health consequences.
So typically, you know, if you're... And you just described some areas where, whether it's from cesspools or sewage or overflows, and it's going into the water, and you know, we all have encountered the Kona Lows, and whether it's, you know, right off the seashore or even, you know, areas that are flooded that have stuff in it. What is your typical sort of timeline for any of the let's say pollution in the water in the form of bacteria affecting you in as a result of your getting in contact with it? How what's the turnaround time for that?
Well, I guess the turnaround time would depend on the pathogen, but I think for most things, like if you are swimming in dirty water and you contract something, say it's like a gastrointestinal type of bug, that'll probably show up in the next day or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, staph infections, those kind of things, which staph may or may not be related to sewage. Like it can be, but it doesn't have to be. But those kind of infections might show up, you know, maybe a couple days later after you get a, you know, you get a scrape and you're in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start noticing some redness a couple days later.
Now, have you heard of, you know, I guess a frequency of these sort of infections and conditions being a result of the Kona Lows?
Yeah, definitely. So with the Kona Lows, we focused some outreach efforts on our CSIC program up on the North Shore where those floods hit really hard. And we got a whole bunch of responses, I think about 30 responses. From people who had gotten different types of sick feelings, whether that's a like a fever or kind of flu-y type symptoms or infections. So there was definitely a big impact from that Kona Lō flooding. There were lots of sewage spills during that time, so there was a lot of pathogens that folks could encounter in the water, especially up on the North Shore or in places where cesspools and septic leach fields might be overflowing.
Well, you know, I personally had this experience during the first Kona Lō where I did have kind of like fever and it felt like I was a flu, and, you know, it sort of gave me some chills, and, you know, sometimes you get that body ache feeling. So I thought it was maybe a kind of a flu symptom, but then it ended up, you know, looking pretty serious in terms of the red sort of inflammation that was occurring on my leg, you know, which, you know, happened like right around that, like you said, the first Kona Lō. And I, you know, was it was painful enough that I figured I better go to the doctor and, you know, have it checked out. And I got, you know, I got a good, you know, like an injection of antibiotics, which helped to really, you know, get rid of it, cleared it up. But it you know, it kind of happened over the period of that first Kona low into the second Kona low. And then I was curious. I didn't get, you know, I didn't go into the water. I didn't, you know, stand in any, you know, running water that was happening on the road or you know, get a scratch or anything. But it did really look like cellulitis. So I was wondering, is that something that you think might have been attributed to the kind of waterborne, and it could have been just as a result of, you know, stuff that's in the air because of all this water that's being kind of kicked up?
I think it's possible that, you know, I'm not, my background isn't in medical science, but I do think it's possible that if there's a lot of pathogens that are in the floodwaters and there's waves breaking and aerosolization,
mm-hmm.
Then, yeah, maybe if you breathe something in or something in or come in contact with that, it could potentially be another source. One thing that we try to do as we're collecting this data is, you know, it's really hard to say, okay, I went swimming or I was like nearby the floodwaters and that's definitely what caused this infection to happen. That's not really what we're going for. Mm. We're more just trying to say, if you think that there's, you know, if you think that you got sick and it could be related to water exposure, especially like coastal waters or floodwaters, then you can put in the survey, you know, why you think that might be. You know, were you exposed to brown water? Did the water that was near you smell like fishy or smell like sewage? You know, there's some different things you can put in there to kind of explain why you think it might have been from the water.
So the survey that you're putting out there and getting people to, you know, respond to, what is it that you really want to capture? What kind of data are you looking for? And as a result of that data, what is your analysis going to help to reveal?
So we're really looking for the locations and the symptoms that people are experiencing, and then also what the water conditions were during that time, like how the water looked and how it smelled. Those mm-hmm. are really some of the most important data points that we're looking for. And, you know, the goal is that we're going to map all of these responses. And so far we have about 70 or so responses that have already come in, and we're going to map them. The map is actually live on our website. You can check it out. And as we accumulate a lot of data, the goal is to identify hotspots and summarize these areas where we're getting lots of reports of illness. And we can pass that information on to decision makers. So those are things like the Department of Health, Surface Water Protection Branch, legislators that are maybe making decisions about, you know, where to put funding to help upgrade wastewater systems. So that's really one of the big goals. And the other goal is just to help folks understand, you know, they can look at the map and they can see where what areas might be more risky, especially if it's a brown water day or especially if it's smelling a little off.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, I do want to kind of have you talk a little bit about some of the I guess typical use cases or scenarios that would, you know, be useful for the survey. Because now that I think about it, you know, I might have gotten something just because I was running along the bike path during that sort of Kona low, and maybe just I didn't go in the water, but there was quite a bit of water on the bike path. So I don't know. Maybe there's a correlation between that, and I just kind of want to curiously pick your brain on, you know. Are you looking for survey responses from people that have actually gone into the water or perhaps have been in some sort of topical exposure to the water? Anyway, so we'll hold that thought. We'll be right back after this short break to continue our conversation with Christina Comfort, who's the Water Quality Program Manager over at Wastewater Alternatives and Innovation and the manager of the CSIC program. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor PCAT, Pacific Center for Advanced Technology Training.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR1. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Christina Comfort, who is the Water Quality Program Manager over at Wastewater Alternatives and Innovation and the Program Manager for the CSIC program. And Christina, you know, right before the break, what are some of the typical kind of examples and use cases that you would like to see responding, you know, to the survey? Is it primarily, you know, let's say you went swimming or you walked into the stream or you had some contact with some form of, you know, water? Now, in my case where I didn't go into the streams or go into the ocean, but I might have, you know, ran during the a rainy period and might have, you know, been in contact with some, you know, potential water. Now, I don't know. I wouldn't have thought of that correlation that would get me to run the survey. So I'm trying to find out from your perspective, what would trigger somebody to make the correlation and say, oh, yeah, you know, I did kind of like run into that water situation and maybe I should, you know, provide some information into this survey.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think for the most part, for our general data collection, we're really focused on water interactions. So mm-hmm. if you're wading or swimming or paddling or fishing, something that like puts you into direct contact with the water, and mm-hmm. then you have a suspected an infection that you suspect was caused by that. Mm-hmm. That's the data we're looking for most of the time. And then in light of the Kona Low events and floods that happened last month, we decided to expand our program to also include floodwater contact.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the floods, if you have any kind of suspected illness or infection connected to that, we are definitely accepting responses for that as well. And you can mark on the survey that you suspect it's related to the Kona Low. And then otherwise, we're collecting data. Kind of our standard data collection for the program is more about water contact.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that you got maybe about 70 responses already. What is a good survey number that you would feel that you have a good sense of what's going on out there?
Ideally, we'd like to get survey numbers well up into the hundreds. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think just the more data that we get, the better, because, you know, it's across multiple different islands. There's, each island has many different places. So if we're going to start identifying hotspots, you know, the more data, the better. So we're really working on doing a lot of outreach at different events and schools also to let kids know, and they can, they can let their parents know to help them fill out the survey if something comes up, sustainability events, that kind of thing. So really just trying to get the word out there, and especially trying to ramp up our efforts on the neighbor islands over this next year.
So the survey has been out for how long, and how long do you feel you need to keep it out there in order to get a good sample size?
So the survey's been out since late last year. I think we started really launching the program sometime in the late fall of 2025.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we've already got about 70 responses, so that's awesome. But we're definitely looking to bump those numbers up and just hear from more people about their stories. And, you know, we can definitely accept stories from folks, if it happened a few years ago or something like that. We still want to know where and what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully we'll collect data for a couple of years.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good idea that even in the example that I brought up, I mean, if you know, I got to look back at when I went running, but you know, I definitely think there's a correlation between what I got and the fact that it was the start of the Kona Low. I mean, I know it was a lot of rain, and you know, it was a period of time that I think not only was it humid, but it was very intense, and it was long standing. So anyway, I think that's worthy of maybe submitting something. Now, you mentioned earlier that as a result of some of the analysis, it would help inform decision makers. And ideally, would you expect to see, what kinds of responses would you like to see? Would you like to see legislation? Would you like to see better notification? What is it that you would like this data to help inform?
Well, I think my top goal for what I would like the data to inform is to help. I would really love to see it help leverage funding for watershed rehabilitation and improved wastewater management.
Mm-hmm.
So, so in places that have a lot of cesspools, for instance, if you're also seeing a lot of reports come in from that area about suspected waterborne illnesses, then I think that could be used to help apply for grant funding and, hopefully help that community clean up the waters through wastewater improvements and other watershed improvements.
So what would your strategy be, given the data and the numbers and the indicators that show, certain things happening more frequently at these particular locations? Is that enough to convince a funder that they should put some money into helping to resolve this? I mean, are there philanthropic funders that are specifically looking at allocations of monies toward this particular goal?
Well, I think that the funding for, large-scale improvements is going to come more likely from state and federal sources because mm-hmm. it's pretty expensive to do these wastewater conversions. In some areas with maybe there's only a few cesspools right along the coast, that's something that could be supported by philanthropic means. But mm-hmm. for bigger projects, we're looking at state, federal type funding. And I would say that this is, it's a storytelling device that can, help bring empathy to the situation and mm-hmm. really show how it's affecting the community. It's also supporting data alongside our water quality data that, VI sometimes collects, or University of Hawaii, or Department of Health, or Surf Rider Foundation. There's a lot of different organizations out there collecting water quality data, and this would be kind of a supporting and kind of complementary piece to show the impacts of wastewater pollution.
Have you tried looking at the grant and aid kinds of programs, and perhaps submitting that to either the counties or to the state of Hawaii?
I am familiar with the grant and aid program, so I will take a look at their upcoming RFPs or request for proposals.
I think the one for this past session is already PAL, so
it would be for next year.
Yeah, you'd have to look for the 2027, and typically, those grant and aids are good for especially pilot projects. If you want to focus in on a particular area and you can kind of scale your requests to a reasonable amount, I think those are good for pilots. And then that could be, whatever results you get from that could be then scaled for perhaps a larger grant or, more money from, let's say, federal programs.
Yeah, thank you. Something good to look into.
So the survey is out there. It's been out there since, the end of 2025. It's been a little while. Obviously, you got a website. Where can people find out more about not only the survey, but the work that you are doing in this water quality program?
Yeah, our website is, we're at viicleanwater.org. That's viicleanwater.org. And you can find the survey for CSIC at viicleanwater.org/CSIC. And that'll take you right to our landing page where you can click a button to submit your story, or you could also click the other button to see that to see the map and all of the submissions that we've already received.
Well, Christina, that's good. I'll put that up on our show notes for later on. Christina Comfort is the Water Quality Program Manager over at Wastewater Alternatives and Innovation, also the Program Manager for the CSIC program. Hey, Christina, I want to thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we'll talk about the Hawaii Energy Conference. If you miss any part of this edition, you can find a podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. Our engineer is David Chong. You can catch us on HBR One every Friday or anytime via the HBR app or your favorite podcast application. In the meantime, you stay safe, you stay awesome. We'll see you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor The Hidden Nene.